The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. Audre Lorde famously penned those words nearly four decades ago. But what do they mean today for those doing the work of justice and reconciliation? What are the tools that will create systems of equality? I'm Rosalie Harden, executive producer of Faith and Finance. Welcome to our podcast. In this season, we're presenting our Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities virtual event, which was held in November of 2020. Economies of interdependence are emerging all around us, and Neighborhood Economics brought together entrepreneurs and change makers, developers and storytellers, pastors and impact investors to share where their communities are finding hope and a way forward. This episode is excerpted from the session Breaking the Power Paradigm, which was a part of the culture track for Neighborhood Economics. This session was moderated by Desiree Kane, a Miwok American Indian and transmedia journalist at the Real News Network. She was joined in conversation by Leroy Barber, co-founder and president of the Voices Project, which influences culture by training and promoting leaders of color. Lanier Richardson, co-founder and CEO of Chicago Trend, which finances strategic retail development to drive neighborhood transformation. And Steve Wanta, co-founder and CEO of Just Community, which invests in underserved female entrepreneurs across the country. The full session of Breaking the Power Paradigm is available for purchase, along with the rest of the Neighborhood Economics Conference, at community.faithfinance.net. I hope you'll enjoy their conversation.
So welcome to our panel. This is Breaking the Power Paradigm, the Culture Breakout for the Neighborhood Economics Summit. So we'll start with Leroy Barber. If you would please again, let us know, what does building communities mean to you in terms of breaking the power paradigm in the context of your work?
Well, thanks for having me on. It's good to be here, and to all the other panelists, good to see y'all. I think I'll just start with kind of the understanding first that that being a neighbor is probably one of the most powerful kind of spaces and places that I've occupied in the midst of thinking about power and thinking about gathering people, thinking about bringing resources together. I've done that most significantly as a neighbor, have used that as pretty much an entry into listening to folks, pulling folks together, being a part of community, and those kind of things. So I think it starts there for me.
Nir, would you go next, please?
Probably so. I am increasingly questioning systems change. And so the way things are always done, and the assumption that they have to be that way. This moment of a pandemic, a protest, and a political pandemonium is giving me sort of the motivation to say, doesn't always have to be that way. Why? Who says that, right? And so what that's done is, in everything from how we invest capital to how we underwrite transactions to how we ultimately structure ownership, this is, what breaking the power, paradigm really means. As you mentioned, I lead the entrepreneurship program at Rutgers Business School, and I've been investing capital through capital provided by the MacArthur Foundation and other impact investors. And as we're doing this work, we are intentionally trying to empower Black ownership of assets, right? Wealth is created by owning assets that generate recurring revenue and ideally appreciate over time. So if we're talking about changing paradigms and bridging racial wealth gap and dealing with systemic inequality, we got to change the systems that prevent people of color from owning assets that appreciate over time and generate recurring revenue. This is that moment.
Thank you, Steve.
So thankful to be on this call, Lanier. I really, your words ring very true. I spent 10 years as a funder after a couple of years in the Peace Corps in Guatemala with Whole Foods Markets Foundation, and we did microcredit around the world. It was great. I got to travel. It was real fun. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. You can give small loans to some of the poorest people in the world. And, you know, this notion of lifting yourself out of poverty was really romantic. And then I think after 10 years of seeing it up close and personal, more and more I questioned its power to be transformational. I didn't know, I didn't have an answer what the alternative was, but I was fortunate. It's fortunate, really extremely fortunate to have a second once in a lifetime opportunity for work to start Just. And I can tell you more about it, but what I came to understand is in the United States, our financial system is really good at excluding people. It's designed to exclude people. And I wondered how, because a woman, $100 in Guatemala that can't read and write and struggles to get by, but yet she can start and she can pay that money back. Why can't we be just as creative in the United States to unlock the potential? I think if we have credit scores and collateral and track records, those are barriers to allow us to say no. And that is fundamentally power. And I hate it. I think it's so unjust. So we have to figure out how we get the yes. That's been my fight for last, probably longer than I can remember. But right now it's really clear. And I know for sure I do not have the answer. I think we've got some good. We've learned a lot in the last 4 years. We're really optimistic, but central to all of it is power. And I don't think I, Steve Want, to deserve to have control of who gets in and gets out. So I'm really encouraged by this conversation and then just conversations I'm hearing all over the country, really about assets. And that idea, microcredit, small loans will not get people out of poverty in a sustainable way. What it will be is real true wealth is created through ownership, not.
Lanier had mentioned earlier, Leroy, and I heard Steve say just now about basically vehicles to help people help themselves. And while being cognizant of the bootstrappy language that often doesn't help BIPOC communities, what are some of the vehicles that you see in your life that really have found a bug in the system where we can shift it to actually help people instead of harm?
So, yeah, I like that question. I guess, I think, you know, I agree with Steve and Lanier about kind of there are these good things happening, there's the stuff available and these kind of things. But I'm gonna take the more cynical route because I think these things, when we look at overall equity and what's happening and the machine that's working against many communities of color, I don't think we can put our full, I don't think we can do too much celebrating before we see some significant change. This is way off kilter. It is not even close. It's not even in the same atmosphere, right? And so I want to celebrate some things, but I'm in too many circles where there's too much celebration of these incremental movements that relieves people who actually have significant power to move. I don't want folks with significant power to feel good about a little move that they make. And so I want to keep foot on the gas of that. Again, I'm agreeing with what they're saying and I celebrate what's happening, but man, we need way more of those little things, right? It's not even close right now. And we know power is not going to share without being pushed to share. And so we gotta keep pushing them to share and to do equitable things. I'm a hopeful dude, but I wanna keep put on the gas, keep the pressure on.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that response. I feel very similarly because we need a substantial change in a very short period of time. And so I appreciate your sense of and your spirit of urgency. So with that, Lanier, how can we contribute in a way that folks, maybe they are able to do small level philanthropy, but as we just heard, incremental change is, it can be very empty in the face of honestly, thousands of people dying, houseless, economic and system collapse. What are the things and the places that you see where people can move when they have a small amount of power into understanding how immense their power can be to affect systemic change in the ways that, you know, you can do from your home? Armchair activism can, and sending thoughts and prayers can sometimes be insulting to people in crisis when you are looking for, material help because you're in a disaster and people are like, oh, thoughts and prayers. How can people shift out of that mentality of, I can only do a little bit and I'm powerless in this big system? But as we know, small groups of organized and focused people can change the world. What can you offer people to help move them in that way and actually break the power paradigm that they're living?
Yeah, I think it's the urgency of this moment is inspiring us to find ways to do business. Right? So there's a whole movement around, philanthropic support and that's necessary and good. But, there's an opportunity now to, just do business. I have a friend that said, if you just do business with me, maybe charity is not as needed, needed, right? So this thought of, can you invest in an entrepreneur? Can you, in some way join an angel investor group, but your whatever that amount of capital is, empower an entrepreneur, help someone, start a business or grow a business, support an existing business. On the other hand, to the extent that you have any control of capital, right? My whole focus is on getting capital to people and places that are overlooked and undervalued, right? If you have any control of capital, to think about how can I, responsibly allocate capital, but then still do it in a way that's intentional about inclusion and intentional about, racial wealth gap closing. That's a mindset, right? And so I'm excited now. I have now seen some of the religious organizations specifically think about how to use their power to, strengthen community, how to use their power to do racial justice investing or creating new funds, right? That's encouraging, right? When you think about, the church is the place of thoughts and prayers, right? But they're now saying, no, not just thoughts and prayers. We're mobilizing our membership, we're encouraging our membership, we're looking at, funds that we have control of being invested in a way that empowers community. And the last thing I think I'll say is, this also is a time when we're breaking down big concepts, right? So community benefits and entrepreneurs and inclusion, you know, my focus is someone you know getting the resources and making money. So if you're talking about community wealth, somebody needs to be making a profit. Somebody needs to be owning an asset, right? And so, you know, while it's great to talk about it in a very general sort of approach, it's like, can you frank to somebody who has gotten some business or gotten some capital as a result of the power that you control, you know, being able to be used, you know, and leverage, you know, to be able to make something happen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. I think one of the reasons that I was asked to moderate this panel is because there's a real need for allies to actually seek power and recognize the ways in which people who ally themselves with the Native community, they look and say, okay, when I walk in, I'm able to do X, Y, and Z. So find those opportunities where it's just easier for you. And people, I'm white, I'm a Native person. And so even I, as a biracial person, have to look at, okay, when I walk into a bank, I get more attention. And how can I leverage that for my community to teach things like financial literacy? How can I just divert whatever I can back into the community? And so that's something that I appreciate hearing from you, Lanier, is like, how in your everyday life can you look at the power that you have and either contribute it back to your own community, or if you're from a white or European descent, how can you take that literally white power and give it over? Just give it over. It's centuries long power hoarding. So how can you exceed power?
And if I, let me just add one other thing. It's also, we've seen this even in some of the, you know, police brutality. It is, you know, when you see an injustice, say something. When you see a systemic challenge, you know, say something, right? I just think there's a, in like community development, the community development finance, and entrepreneurial support, there's a whole lot of Me Too people out there that have, you know, been not able to access capital, right? Been, you know, I always joke, you know, there's, you know, there's some organization capital and you never see it, right? There's some challenges even now with TDFI, you know, do they really ultimately, are they, you know, more conservative to banks now, right? You know, I heard someone called Lyft. No risk list, right? And so there are people out there who can't access capital from, you know, the people who are supposing to help, right? The worst hurdle.
Can I ask an air question?
When somebody who's supposed to be helping, we can't help. Right? So so I'll stop there.
No, but I can't. I wouldn't mind. I know it doesn't matter. I don't
Steve, are you trying to?
But I'd love to ask you a question, Lanier. So. How do you get to yes when you mentioned CDFI? So Just is actually a CDFI. And I looked across the country at CDFIs as a funder, and that was my big frustration, is that there was credit scores, they didn't want to lend less than $25,000. So getting access to capital in our system, I would love to hear you talk about things you've seen or hypothesis you may even have about how you get to yes. In our thinking in the United States around entrepreneurship, it's like, what's your business plan? What's your cash flow? And sometimes those aren't capital ready, but yet we know as entrepreneurs, money alone does in fact matter. So I'm just so super curious if you have any anecdotes or thoughts on that.
Yeah, so two things, right? You know, we've been playing with a concept for the last couple of years, we're calling it dequity, right? It's the discipline of debt, but the optimism of equity. So, you know, we're not just 100% saying, show me your last 3 years financial statements, then, you know, 3 years operating history and your bank, you know, bank account for the last 3 years. Some part of what's needed now is for someone to sit down with an entrepreneur, you know, and understand, you know, the projection, to understand the business plan,
that understands the entrepreneur's experience, okay? You know, to institutionalize sort of, you know, friends and family around, right? The rich uncle. There's a call now for folks who have capital to not just do traditional underwriting, right? Just, you know, everybody's doing that. There's a lane for CDFI and bank lending. But there's a call now for new institutions that will allocate capital, you know, and maybe that it means even when we're receiving the capital, we're expecting that there's going to be a higher default rate. But that's not necessarily a negative, right? There's, you know, all right, we're not, if everybody's underwriting them, we're only going to have a default rate. There's no system change in that. Maybe we're saying, all right, we're going to have a 20% default, but we're going to have these other improvements and we're going to see these other changes and we're going to define impact, you know, in a different way, right? Because I just see it right now as everybody's doing the same old school underwriting. And, you know, you buy a piece of property, it takes 30, a commercial property, it takes 30%, you know, cash. Well, unless you're making a loan to an athlete, or, you know, the few wealthy individuals, you're never going to have community ownership of a commercial corridor. So maybe how can we sit together and imagine, all right, maybe the equity requirement is 5% or 10% or 15%, right? Or who decided that 30% had to be the rule? And if so, how do we mitigate that in another way that empowers entrepreneurship and empowers inclusive ownership of property? I mean, that's, again, I wake up every day thinking about it.
Thank you for listening to the Breaking the Power Paradigm session from Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities. This session was moderated by Desiree Kane, a Miwok American Indian and transmedia journalist at the Real News Network. She was joined in conversation by Leroy Barber, co-founder and president of the Voices Project, which influences culture by training and promoting leaders of color. The full session of Breaking the Power Paradigm is available for purchase, along with the rest of the Neighborhood Economics Conference, at community.faithfinance.net. Additional abridged episodes are available at faithfinance.fm, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Faith and Finance, be sure to follow us on Twitter at FaithFinanceNet or visit our website at faithfinance.net. Next up, music by David Benjamin Blower. David was our musical guest artist for Neighborhood Economics. You can find more of his music at davidbenjaminblower.com. I hope you enjoy, and again, thank you for listening. Still.
everyone. Doors, sons, from your houses, sing your holy notes with all things. And be still. Thank you.